Spectrum Business works with small businesses nationwide, so we know that running your own business means doing it all. Marketing, sales, inventory, customer service, and more. Spectrum One for Business helps you keep it all connected for just $49.99 a month. Get fast, reliable internet, advanced Wi-Fi with Security Shield, and a free mobile line for one low price. Stay connected and do it all with Spectrum One for Business. Only $49.99 a month. Go to spectrum.com/business to learn more. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
We welcome you back. The second hour of the program is live. First hour, we chatted a lot about Tebow and a lot about the NIL, and that continues to be a huge topic of conversation. Michael Smith joining us shortly from the Sports Business Journal on NIL and where it is. We heard from Dennis Dodd earlier today. Let's get back to the Tebow situation for just a moment. And this is Austin Lane. He's a former NFL tight end, the host of Action Sports Jax on ESPN Radio. He was joining Freddie and Fitzsimmons about whether Tebow is going to be in Jacksonville simply for his leadership.
The whole narrative that Tim Tebow coming to Jacksonville, being an Urban Meyer guy and helping out that locker room presence, I think it's baloney. I'm not buying into that narrative. Because what guys look for in terms of leadership and what guys buy into is guys that have had success, you know, leaders, like guys that you can say, this guy is a baller, I got to follow him and watch how he does things. Now, I've talked to Tim many times. Tim is a fantastic guy. But I think the whole narrative of you're going to bring him in because he's a great locker room guy? All right, great. There's tons of great locker room guys. There's tons of great teammates, just like any locker room is made up of all types of people. So I'm not buying that.
Austin Lane also talked about what exactly will Tebow be doing, assuming he makes the team?
The whole narrative that Tim Tebow coming to Jackson, I understand that he knows Urban Meyer. They have a great relationship. I guess, you know, Urban Meyer bought a house right next to Tim Tebow. So even if he makes the team, that's going to be like a great E! Hollywood TV show, Urban Meyer and Tim Tebow, you know, next door. It's going to be fantastic. It's going to do all the ratings. But I do think this is Urban Meyer's first year in the NFL. And, you know, he's bringing his guys in. I understand all that. But what Urban Meyer's got to realize real quick is that you can't fake anything. If Tim Tebow is going to make this team, it's because Tim Tebow has earned the spot. There are no, you know, there is no, I like this guy a lot, let's give him a spot. That doesn't work like that. Players in that locker room will see through that day one. So one or two things are going to happen. Either Tim Tebow is not the tight end, which we don't think he is, and I'll be honest, I'm kind of in that boat, or Tim Tebow is a tight end, and he earns his spot, and he gets that roster spot, and that's it. If Tim Tebow's not good enough to earn the roster spot, he's not going to get it. Because if Urban Meyer gives him that spot, he's going to lose that locker room in a heartbeat.
Very interesting comments there. We'll get your reaction on that and everything else as we continue here with the second hour of our program. And Nick is up next in Louisiana. Hello, Nick. Thanks. Good afternoon.
Hi, Paul. Thanks for taking my call. It's an honor to speak to you.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, I got to thinking about this and listening to your conversation this morning on the way to work about the relationship between Tebow and Urban and it being, you know, more than and no detriment to his father, a father-son relationship and how close they are. I think best case scenario, Tebow comes in and he is a boost to that leadership of a team that very well earned their number one draft spot. But the flip side to that is think of the culture impact with that kind of relationship when Urban potentially cuts Tebow for not making the team. It's, hey, we're here to win, you know, we're here to turn around our ways, and it doesn't matter who you are, you've got to earn your spot and compete. I just wanted to get your take on
no,
that.
No, that's a good point. And as many have pointed out, it's May 11th. The NFL season does not begin until the first weekend or the second weekend in September. So there's a lot that happens, and I don't think anyone knows whether. First of all, they had to decide whether to sign him or not. They did, and
right.
Well, no. One thing about the NFL, there aren't any secrets. Once he gets to training camp, we will know quickly whether he can play or not.
Fair enough. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you. And a good point was made by Nick. If Urban cuts him, he really can't announce his retirement, considering he hasn't played a regular season game since 2012. So what is there something else? Does he move into the front office? Does he remain? I mean, these are things I'm sure they have already thought about. Let's check out Guy, who is in Houston. Hello, Guy. Thanks. Good afternoon.
Thanks, Paul. Tim Tebow's role as a player, I think, is going to be, if you will, an offensive specialist. Like a team may have kick returners, punt returners, tacklers on special teams that are just so good you keep them for that one role. Tim's not going to be a blocker as a tight end, but they will throw the ball to him and let him run the ball. More importantly, he's going to do probably end around the reverses. He's going to stop and throw the ball 5 yards. When he was a freshman, and keep in mind, I'm a Georgia Bulldog. I hate all things Gator except Tim Tebow. And when he was a freshman at Florida and they were headed to a national championship, he was in a backup role. He'd come in at the 5-yard line. He'd throw a jump pass for a touchdown and run off the field. And then he started for 3 years. Won the Heisman, won a national championship the year after that. When he went to Denver, the first year they said, well, he's not good enough. He can't play quarterback. They stuck with a journeyman quarterback and had a terrible year. The next year they went 1-4. They were all looking forward to getting a number one draft pick. And finally they said, well, let's let the kids start with all this public demand. Tebow came in, took them to 6 straight wins. They lost a game, won another one, ended up winning their division and winning the first round of the playoffs against the Pittsburgh Steelers, the number one defense in football. They won it in overtime, took them 12 seconds on an 80-yard pass from Tebow. It's the fastest overtime win in NFL history. And during the season, Westbrook and Champ Bailey, two Hall of Fame quality cornerbacks, made the comment that he turned around the defense as well as the offense, because when he came in, because of his passion to play and his enthusiasm and how hard he worked, the defense got together and said, we need to work as hard as he does to be worthy of his effort. He elevated the entire team. And I know Austin Lane is an NFL player. I've never played but 1 year at Georgia as a walk-on. So I'll defer to him about that. But we've seen Tim Tebow turn around an NFL locker room when he was considered ineffective as a quarterback, but he wasn't. And I think he'll have a role to play, but I agree. He's not a real tight end. I don't see him blocking anyone. But if he catches a pass and makes 5 yards, throws a pass for 5 yards, they'll have a role for him as an offensive specialist. And I think he is a leader that all the players will look up to.
That's really a good analysis. And I think when you have to also remember who the head coach is. And I know that sounds funny, but Urban Meyer is a different type of coach. He preaches that type of locker room, and I know he trusts Tebow with his life, and I think that matters in this situation.
I agree, and of course Meyer, I always think of as a Gator, so I hate him too, but he is a brilliant coach, and I think it's a good call on his part.
Hey, thank you very much for sharing your insight. That was good. It's always great to have somebody that's been there versus those of us who just pontificate for a living. Jim is up next. Hey, Jim, thank you. Good afternoon.
Hi, Paul. Thanks for taking my call today.
Sure, thank you.
I haven't watched NFL since Kaepernick started the kneeling down stuff, and that's just my personal beliefs, my personal thought process on the whole thing. I haven't watched more Oregon players except for one half last year. I watched Herbert. Would love to be able to watch Marcus play, but it's just my personal feeling on the NFL. But with Tim coming back, regardless of what is rolling on this team, if he makes this team, I will watch. I will watch every Jaguar game I can watch. I hope I can help with their usage or whatever. of people watching, and I think there's a lot of people out there like me, Paul, that haven't watched the NFL in a long time, but are Tebow supporters, and they may come back just for that one team, and I hope if he does come back, I hope it shows, and I hope it shows in the ratings for that team, Paul.
I don't think there's any question. I think if, you know, if the Jaguars are playing the Houston Texans on a Thursday night NFL preseason game and Tebow is going to play, I'm watching it just, I'm out of absolute curiosity.
Absolutely, Paul. Thanks for taking my call, buddy.
Thank you very much. Great to have you. We are going to take a break. More of your phone calls, and pretty low key today. Not a lot of breaking news after yesterday. We're going to delve in a little deeper on the NIL with one of the most knowledgeable reporters in the industry. He is Michael Smith of the Sports Business Daily and Journal, and he will join us next.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free, no insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
And we welcome you back. And one of the best reporters anywhere is our next guest. He is Michael Smith with the Sports Business Journal, primarily covering the collegiate beat and among other things. He covers quite a bit there, but it is just such a pleasure to welcome him back to our program. Michael, it's been too long. I hope you're well. I miss seeing you. Of course, that would go for pretty much everyone we both know, but have you been?
Doing well, Paul. I appreciate you having me back, and it's good to catch up with you, my friend.
It is great to talk to you, and we have had conversations in the past about NIL, and I know there were a lot of warnings that this thing was going to come down to a point when there was no looking back. So as someone who has written about it for forever, many, many years, help us understand better where we are right now on the 11th of May.
I think it is predictably chaotic, especially given the astonishing lack of leadership coming out of Indianapolis. I mean, if you go back to January, when the vote was supposed to be held on name, image, and likeness to begin with, and Mark Emmert came out and said from his position as president, encouraged the D1 council not to take a vote, which was just the NCAA has just gotten skewered over that decision, because once again, it was the NCAA saying, we're going to do this for name, image, and likeness and for the student athletes, and then they didn't do it. And so, to a large degree, these schools have been in a holding pattern trying to figure out what's the next move, what's going to happen next. You know, is the Supreme Court decision going to provide some guidance? Are the schools going to, be affected by these state laws? And there are now five states in which there are laws regarding name, image, and likeness. And so, you know, if you're a school in one of those states, you're preparing for one thing. If you're a school in a different state, you're preparing for something else. And now Emmert comes out over the weekend and says, you know, maybe we should have a vote on this. Maybe we should enact NCAA legislation on name, image, and likeness before July 1st. And it's just a chaotic series of events that really further amplifies the lack of leadership coming out of the NCAA, which is set at a pretty low bar to begin with.
Yeah. But, you know, the good news is, Michael, with that extreme lack of leadership, and I read your column about it the other day, the good news is that Mark Emmert has been extended now, I think, until the end of time. So we should all sleep better, shouldn't we?
I want that level of accountability for my job, which is zero. It's unbelievable. You know, right on the verge of having a report back exploring gender inequities at the NCAA, what's happened with name, image, and likeness. And despite all that, he gets extended by the Board of Governors. It's just unbelievable.
And I want to ask you about that, Michael, because unlike myself, who goes on talk shows and different mediums and bloviates, and I'm not saying I don't know what's going on, but I'm known for going to that edge occasionally. You're not. You're one of the most grounded reporters I know. You know everyone in the industry. You work for what many consider to be the Bible of sports and sports business. So you don't just flare and give wild hot takes. But when you wrote about Emmert's extension, it was stinging in commentary, but also in the reporting of the people with whom you spoke. Can you share some of that with us?
Well, that just comes from talking to athletic directors every day, people who work in this business every day, who just don't understand what he's doing, what his role is, the lack of communication coming from Indianapolis. It's just terribly frustrating for the athletic directors who are on the front line, so to speak, who are trying to create policies and direction for their programs. And you know, from day to day and week to week, that seems to change. And there's no real understanding of what the strategy is, what the direction of the NCAA is, what the purpose of the NCAA is. And this is a perfect example. Going back to January, when they were supposed to have this vote on name, image, and likeness, and Emmert helped get the vote killed in January, he said it was because of a threatening letter from the DOJ and that he was going to follow up by going to speak with the DOJ about what their concerns were. So here it is now, May, and he's talking about another vote. Has there been any discussion with the DOJ? What happened there? How did that get resolved? There's no communication. Nobody has an answer for that. In fact, there's a lot of athletic administrators who are really curious about how that first letter from the DOJ came about to begin with. It just doesn't add up. And again, the lack of communication is really, it's not just scarring the people in Indianapolis. It's scarring the people who work in this business.
I wonder, and it doesn't matter now because he was extended, but what happens to those who really do have the influence in intercollegiate athletics, Michael? I'm talking about the top line athletic directors that you talk to, especially the commissioners, people that are at the top line. How do they deal with him, and or do they deal with him other than what's absolutely necessary?
Well, I think to a large degree, the leadership has got to come from those five, Power Five conference commissioners. And, you know, I start with Greg Sankey. I mean, I think Greg really distinguished himself through the pandemic, through his decision-making, through his patience. And I think a lot of people now look to him as the leader of college athletics. You know, that's part of every Power Five commissioner's job, is to be a leader in college athletics. And I think Sankey does that as well as anyone. But it's reflective of how, you know, Emmert is not setting the tone. You know, the NCAA president is responsible for setting the tone for the issues of the day and for setting the agenda for the NCAA and what's supposed to be most important to the NCAA. And I think more and more of that comes from people like Sankey and Bob Bowlesby and other commissioners, and less so from Emmert.
Michael Smith, who covers the sport for the Sports Business Journal. Michael, let me end on the college football playoff, another one of your everyday conversations with ADs and administrators. And give us your best snapshot of where we are right now.
Well, you know, it's talk of expansion, while it's fun to discuss. I think largely there's been a sentiment that, you know, expansion would be a good thing, whether it's to 6 or 8 or, whatever the number is. I think the question has always been, how do you get there? And so I think what's encouraging is that it's at least being discussed and talked about in ways where it's not, you know, this can't happen. It's like, you know, what if we tried this, what if we tried that? And I think there's enough of a distinction there to be encouraged if you're in favor of expansion. And so, you know, where that goes from there is, there are so many transformative, incredibly important issues in front of the college leadership right now, between NIL, the, you know, transfer portal, and college football expansion, and so on. So where that falls and how much attention that gets over this next 6 months or so leading up to the 2022 championship, I think is definitely right there at the top of the list among those other items.
When do you think it will get resolved?
Oh boy. That's a great question, Paul. I could see it getting resolved. Of course, none of this happens without the input of TV and the ESPN, right? So,
true.
I don't know that it'll get resolved this year, but I think there seems to be enough momentum behind the discussions that it's going to continue to get pushed along and until it does eventually happen.
Hey, Michael, one other question, which I'm sure I could get an answer by calling the main headquarters of where I work, but I'll ask you. You and your colleague John Oren broke the story initially about, and it was some time ago, where that the SEC and ESPN had reached a long-term massive agreement that ultimately would move the CBS 330 game away from that network to ESPN. And you have followed up, as others, speculating that it could unwind sooner than the end of the deal, which I think is still 4 years off. Any movement on that?
It makes a lot of sense, and I can understand why people might think that, you know, ESPN would take over this deal sooner than the. I think there's this year and 21, 22, 23. This year and three years left. So. But I haven't seen any real evidence that would make me think that that's going to change. It's such a sweetheart deal for CBS, given what they get from that versus what they pay for that. At $55 million a year, it's such a unbelievable deal for CBS. I'm sure that they'll do everything they can to hang on to it for as long as they can.
Doesn't it just take money, though, to get out of it?
Isn't that the case for everything?
Well, it seems that way. I mean, not in the world you and I work in, but in the world we live in.
Yeah, very true. Very true.
It's great to have you on. So many interesting issues. Michael Smith, one of the best around on this. Michael, thanks so much. Hope to see you soon.
Always good to be with you, Paul. Appreciate it.
You got it. Michael Smith from the Sports Business Journal. And we will take a short break. More of your phone calls right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
And we are back here on a Wednesday afternoon. We've had a couple of really good guests talking some serious subjects. We had Michael Smith on a moment ago, and you heard earlier from Dennis Dodd, both speaking about the NIL situation. We also heard about the situation a minute ago with the college football playoff. Connor Riley will join us a little bit later on, talking about the Dogs and the college football season. I mentioned that we have gotten our first inkling that we really will have a college football season when Tennessee announced that it is moving the Bowling Green game from Saturday to Thursday night. They'll play the first game of the year in the SEC on the SEC network. Most years there is usually a Thursday night game that kicks the season off. I know we've done our show from there many, many times. I am trying to remember. Last year, of course, we did not do that. The year before, I'm trying to remember. Maybe we didn't do it the year before, but the year before that, I remember being in Texas A&M for the opening night of the season. But it's always a good way to showcase, and for especially a new coach. And I'm sure that Neyland Stadium will be rocking on that night just to see what Josh Heupel's team will look like. Let's move along and talk to Platypus, who is in Pittsburgh. Hello, Platypus. Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul. Good to talk to you again.
Thank you very much.
So this is your resident millennial speaking here. I love fantasy football. I love it. Play it every year. I win a lot of money every year. I'm a good manager. And with that being said, one of the most irrelevant position groups in the NFL, by far, is the Jacksonville Jaguars. We never talk about them. Nobody knows anybody in that room besides Tim Tebow, and he's been there a day. In the last day, we've spoken more about Tim Tebow than we have any other Jacksonville Jaguar tight end in the past 10 years. And that's my point. Tim Tebow makes them instantly relevant. And it's a franchise that needs relevancy. It wasn't but a couple years back that they were about to go to London, right? And
you're right.
That's my point. They're instantly relevant. I'm not saying Tim Tebow is going to be a good fantasy player by any means. He might not even make the team. But instant relevancy is what that franchise needs. Wanted to state that. And then, Paul, I think the reason why you think good old Trevor Lawrence isn't that interesting? It's because of all that hair. Paul, he'd be as interesting as you, Paul.
I mean, I know people take it the wrong way when you don't just bow down and talk about Trevor as if he is a disciple, but he's been a great player since high school, but I've never really heard him say anything that was interesting to me. And maybe it is the hair. I don't think it is. Let's continue. Mad Dog in Macon, Georgia. You are on the air. Go right ahead.
How you doing, Paul?
Mad Dog, we are doing great. Thank you for the call.
Absolutely. Great to be back. Thanks for taking my call. Last week I was in Athens, and I ran into our mutual friend, Lauren Smith.
Really? Tell me about it.
Well, it was interesting. I was up there for some continuing education and just randomly ran into him one time, and then another time a tornado came through and we were down in the bunker of the basement. So we had some time to talk. As you know, he's just a prince of a man and just a true Southern gentleman and a scholar. And he's nothing like his son, Kent, my buddy, who's a real rascal. And I should know because I'm a rascal, too. We got into all manner of hijinks from Athens to Aspen. But anyway, we got to talking about the Dogs, of course, and hope springs eternal this time of year. And we broke down the position groups, and of course, DB is the biggest concern. And kind of when it was all said and done, it came down to this. It, as you know, it's a two-game season. It's Clemson and it's Bama. So we're not impartial, and what we want to know is, one, what's your prediction of the Clemson score?
I will tell you this. Before Pickens was hurt, I was leaning heavily toward – not heavily, but I was leaning toward Georgia. I'm thinking about it right now, and okay. I'm not sure I'm ready to make a call, but I think Georgia has a really good chance to win.
Okay. I'll
I'm not sold
that.
On Clemson. Then? I know that sounds crazy. But I don't think you can just move a new quarterback in, even though he's good, after a lifetime starter like that. ETN's gone. A lot of other key players are gone. And one other thing, Clemson wasn't that good last year.
What, your word's not mine, Paul. Your word's not mine. I tell you, their D-line is scary good, but I'm with you on the reloading there. That's going to be hard to do. That leads
and
me to the next
I wonder if last year ultimately it just didn't catch up to them, that they played a pretty middling schedule. Notre Dame was tough, but other than that, they had that one scare against Boston College, but they didn't see anyone that was that good.
Well, you're taking the words right out of my mouth. I say that pretty much every year, and I'm going to get to that in just a second. But first, what is your prediction if Georgia makes it to play for certain Alabama in the SEC championship
okay,
game?
Okay, I'm not making this official yet because I don't want to scare anyone. But
I won't hold you to it.
Alabama's going to lose a game this year. I will go that far. And I follow this every day, of course. I mean, you know that. It's not like I don't want to say, well, I haven't really looked at the schedules yet. But I don't really hunker down, to use a Lauren phrase, until the summertime, because I just want to see everything that goes on. I want to hear everything. I want to talk to the coaches, which we normally do this time of the year, and just kind of let it settle in, and not necessarily go with conventional wisdom. Sometimes you're right. Sometimes I felt last year A&M was heading toward a really good year. I missed on Georgia. I kept hearing the Florida conversation, and I just couldn't buy it. But then again, neither one of us knew that the Georgia team would be a mash unit by the Florida game either.
True. So if Georgia – let's just say Georgia loses to Clemson and Bama. It's close. Clemson and Bama run the table. They're the number one and number two teams in the country. Does Georgia get in?
Probably not. I happen to think Oklahoma – if I had to bet on one team getting in over anyone else, I might go with Oklahoma right now.
Mm-hmm.
I base that on the QB and the schedule. And I'm not sure I'm committed to another team yet. I think it's Ohio State without giving it a lot of thought. So I don't think that would be advantageous for Georgia to lose both games. Now, I do think a win over Clemson in the first game could give them some breathing room. But
True. In
no way do I think they can get in with two losses.
All right, one point I'd like to make, and then I'll let you go. So the pundits always say, well, Oklahoma and Ohio State can't help it that they play a weak schedule. Well, by that same token, and way more so, Georgia shouldn't be punished due to playing the two best teams in the country.
No, you're right. And this year, it's a little bit different for Ohio State. They have Oregon, I believe it's the second week of the year. And so that is significant in my estimation. Remember, last year they were going to Oregon, which would have been a tremendously great game. Now I'm looking at Clemson's at Ohio. And by the way, this I really haven't looked at a lot of this because you get so knee deep in the SEC stuff. But Oklahoma plays Nebraska this year, which is that doesn't do them any good. And I mean, you're going to get a bunch of old-timers talking about the 1971 game, but Nebraska is a joke of a team right now. Come on. Their schedule is not very good. I mean, they play Tulane, which is had a good season last year, Western Carolina, Nebraska, and then everything else is in the league.
Well, Well, that's just my point exactly.
They're at Baylor and at Oklahoma State late, but I mean, I'm not afraid of anyone in the Big 12. Are you?
No, not at all. Especially given their schedules. I mean, I'd love to have them play our schedule a year and we play theirs and see what happens. They'll both be three lost teams at least.
Well, you tell Lauren. I can't wait. I can't wait to get. I don't know when I'm going to be in Athens this year, but I really would love to catch back up with him. He came up to our studio a couple of years ago. He was interviewing me for something, and I must admit I can't remember what it was. But we had a blast, and I've talked to him a few times, and obviously I've seen him over the years. But as I'm looking at Georgia's schedule, I'm trying to figure out when in the world we might be in Athens. I see the Auburn game there. I see Kentucky there.
Auburn's at Auburn, isn't it?
You're right. I just misread that. Kentucky, I don't see a lot of great, maybe. I mean, I haven't doped out the schedule. Usually you kind of dope the schedule out. And
our schedule is regrettable for home games.
Yeah, no, it's not a great home schedule.
No, it's not.
But I did a podcast the other day with Jim Dunn, and I got in trouble because he asked me about Athens, and I said it was the best college town in America. So I've heard from, but I'm not running for public office. I don't feel like I have to say, well, they're all so good that I just can't. I mean, I think it was 2 years ago. I was in Athens two or three times, and I came away thinking there are a lot of great college towns, but I've never seen one where the students love the campus life more than the University of Georgia. Hey, thanks so much for the call. I'm curious what other people think, because I caught a lot of blowback for that comment. But I know everyone loves their hometown. And if you said, if you had one game left to see before they carried you away, I mean, I would choose my alma mater, which everyone else would too. I wasn't talking about going to a football game. I'm talking about the best college town. And I just unequivocally thought it was Athens. I mean, there are a lot of great college towns. If someone has an opinion on that, you're welcome to it. And we are heading to the break at 855-242-7285. A long way to go. We'll talk about the Dogs at the top of the hour with Connor Riley. We have certainly spent a lot of time on NIL and Tebow. We can move on to other subjects. We are pretty loose today. We don't tell you what to talk about. We just want to talk to you, and we will be right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
We welcome you back. It's great to have all of you here. Let's get to the calls at 855-242-7285. And Kent is up next in Indiana. Hello, Kent.
Hey, Paul. How you doing? First time
calling. We are doing
calling.
Great. Thank you.
Good. I've been listening to you for a while, and I listened to you talk about the playoffs, college football playoffs. Is there 10 conferences in major college football?
Yeah, I think there are. Yeah, I think that's the right number.
So, my thought is to eliminate some of this talk every year about who should have got in, shouldn't have got in. Why don't they make it where every conference winner gets an at large? You get a berth, and then that would make it have to be maybe a 12 or 16 team playoff. And I'm favor of 16 myself. They do it in Division 1A and 2A. So do 16, that would add two games to the playoff. Do like you say, the first two rounds would be at the home campus or at a home stadium. And that way, each conference will get a team in, and then the committee gets to pick the other six.
Yeah, as long
what
as
– What do you think about that idea?
I mean, I am – there. I think there has to be something in there, though, that makes, and I know this is going to be debatable, but if you have a league where the winner has something like a 8-4 record, do you really want that team in the playoff?
Yeah, and I would even say to the point is, if you got more than two losses, then maybe you don't get in.
Yeah, I mean, there has to be something in terms of a ranking, maybe. I think the ranking is the key, because you could have four losses in the SEC, and you still might be in the top ten.
That's true. And then it don't penalize, for like a good conference, it don't penalize that conference for playing, like I know SEC only play eight conference games. It won't penalize them.
Hey, I hate to run. Hey, thanks so much for the call. We're up against a break. We have two more hours to go. We are coming right back.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.